Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you could join me tonight. I hope all the terrible news hasn't gotten everybody to a point where they don't want to leave their bedroom. I listened again this evening to some of the news, and seems like all kinds of things are happening all over the world, things that are sad and pointless and just awful for so many people. I'm expecting Izzy Kaplan to call this evening so we can talk some more about Bullies to Buddies. And I also wanted to let him know about the wonderful show we had with Linda Ellington, the the lovely lady that has designed the characters to help teach young people about having some self-esteem and embracing other people's differences. I think she was wonderful. I hope everybody enjoyed her as much as I did. I feel like when somebody has that much compassion about what they see going on in the world, and they come up with a vision on how to make things better, it's a wonderful thing. And I think that that's definitely where she sits. Her education and the things she's done with her life prior to doing this, I think, have added to her empathy for kids, because of course she's written textbooks for colleges and universities and I'm sure had her share of meetings with some young people. And of course every time we meet somebody who's say 18 to 21, if you are the kind of person that really pays attention to their behavior, you can pretty much figure out what kind of young person they were. And I find it to be very interesting. I have a house full of kids, as most of you know, and everybody's different. I have boisterous, I have quiet, I have in-your-face funny, I have kids that love school, I have kids that hate school. all different personalities. And of course that's one of the things that we're trying to get everybody to understand, that it's almost impossible to come up with one answer for so many different situations. Just like adults, what works for me will not work for you, and vice versa. But learning how to embrace our differences and respect them, that's what we're trying to accomplish at this point in time. I listened tonight about the presidents that are opening the president's library, and they gave some real conversation to Bush's term in as president, and how people thought he was wonderful, and then the couple mistakes he made kind of made him a washout. And it hurt my feelings, because I thought to myself, my gosh, again, we're passing judgment on, you know, someone else, and none of us were in his shoes. So, again, another opportunity for adults to make things more understandable and more compassionate for children. And instead, we went the route to actually defame one of our presidents. I don't get it. So I'm going to bring in Shelley, and I hope Izzy is joining us. I think he's coming in right now. Let me bring everybody in. Hi, Shel.
Hey, Reen.
How are you, honey?
I'm doing real good. And you?
I'm good. I seem to be catching a cold again, thanks to my AJ, but other than that, I'm great. Have I got you on the line too, Izzy?
Yes, you do.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be back.
Thank you. Thank you. We had a great show Monday night, Izzy, with this lady that came to me through a mutual friend. You will really appreciate her. She is a teacher, and she's done a lot of work with young people, and she also is a textbook writer, author for some of the local universities, and she decided that she wanted to work with the really, really young children, you know, like preschool and kindergarten and through those ages. So she's written some children's books, and she travels all around and reads the books. And it's a lot about embracing our differences. She has a whale who has a spout under his chin instead of on top of him, and when he goes underwater, he hiccups and everybody makes fun of him. She has a squid that wears glasses and is made fun of by her own relative. She has a duck that has webbed ears instead of webbed feet. It's very sweet, and the whole idea is to get the kids to understand that it's okay to be a little bit different. And Shelley and I talked today, and we thought we would get some of your points of view in regard to the real young people. And, of course, your technique, I think, is even easier with young people because they're ready to make friends all the time, 2- and 3-year-olds. And I'm thinking that it will even work quicker when they're so young because they don't have all of the all the stuff that makes them embarrassed and makes them be worried that they're not going to have acceptance and things like that. So I'm going to open that up to you, and let's hear what you have to say about some of the young people, if you have anything to say about them, I hope. And Shel, do you have anything to add to that from what we got from Linda the other night?
No. Well, not yet. I want to see how the conversation unfolds, but at the present moment, I just want to kind of see where Izzy goes, and then I may have a question for him.
Okay. All right. Have I put you on a hot spot, Izzy?
No, I love talking about this.
Okay, good. Great. We thought you would, but, you know, I thought I better. You've turned into our fountain of information, Izzy, so every Wednesday you're going to get bombarded because Shelley and I learn all this stuff the rest of the week, and then we get you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
You know, but we seem to forget that human beings are social creatures. We're acting as though they're computers, and what they do is what the adults programmed them to do. Human beings have been on the planet for thousands and thousands of years. We've been evolving, and we got along with each other before there were any anti-bullying programs and anti-bully education. You leave
That's
people
true.
Alone, they figure out how to get along with each other, especially children. You know, I go to family events, and there are adults and there are children. Who do you think is having more fun with each other? The adults or the children?
At family get-togethers, probably the adults.
Are having more fun than the children?
Yeah.
Who's laughing more? Who's laughing more and being more excited? The children or the
adults? Oh, well, the kids are laughing more and having,
They run around. They have a great time with each other. I go to a synagogue, which is in a very small room, and there are a whole bunch of children of all ages. And the kids spend hours running around inside, outside. Nobody has to say a word to them. They get along wonderfully. We don't have to make children get along with each other. When we try to make them get along with each other, then they start fighting over us because each one wants us on their side. So the hostilities escalate. But if you leave them alone, they figure out how to get along with each other. I'd like to tell you about a wonderful book. Now, if you want to interrupt me, please do so, because I'm going to give you a short lecture about a book. But if you want to stop me, go ahead.
No. Well, I just wanted to say one quick thing, because you opened this door up. I take AJ to a little play area at the Wellington Mall, and it's just plastic toys, you know, like a boat and a slide, and nothing is big, everything is little, and the kids, I mean, when I say raise hell, It's nothing short of that. I mean, they run and they race, and I sit there on the sidelines with, oh, probably 60 or 70 other parents and grandparents, and I cannot believe nobody gets hurt. But what I've observed is if somebody gets knocked down by a bigger kid, a little person gets knocked down or something, every time that I've been there, the bigger kid turns around. If there's no parents there for that little kid to get in trouble, the one that knocked down the littler one, they turn around and help him up and make sure they're all right. The other day I watched a little boy turn around and lift up this little girl, and she took a hold of his hand, and she didn't want to let go of his hand. She wanted to stick with him. But if no parents got involved, it's beautiful. I keep thinking that I'm going to go one day and record it, because it's just what you just said. They run, they race, they play. If something does happen and no parents come running over, they handle it themselves and they handle it beautifully. So I just wanted to say that I've seen that in action.
Yeah. And it's not because somebody taught them to do it. They're biologically programmed to do it. We're social creatures who have been evolving for millions of years. So getting along feels good. Not getting along feels bad. So we learn by ourselves to get along with each other. It's not a perfect system, but you'll notice if you ever see, you know, two siblings fighting, as soon as have a problem with each other, as soon as a parent approaches to help them, they start screaming and crying. It escalates as soon as the parent approaches, because each one wants the parent on their side, and their parent is the most important person in the world to them. So they start fighting over the parents. Each one wants to prove to their parent that they are right and the other one is wrong. They each want to get each other in trouble with the parent. But if you leave them alone, figure out how to get along. But I want to tell you about a book. I think everybody in education should read this book. It came out in 1986, so it's like 27 years old. But it still should be read. It's called Preschool in Three Cultures. It was written by a team of psychologists who did very detailed studies of preschools, one in Japan, one in China, and one in the United States. They filmed it. They spoke to parents, teachers, principals. They got everybody's feedback about their filming, and a very intensive study. They try to find typical preschools in each of these three countries. Of course, there's nothing exactly typical. But the school in Japan was incredible. There's 30 students. This is preschool, 3 years old, 4 year old kids.
Okay.
30 students for one adult. The ratio is 30 students for one adult. The teachers do not get involved in their fights. Of course, if there's going to be something really dangerous, of course they will. But in general, they just let the kids fight and figure out how to get along with each other. They send the four-year-old kids to take the three-year-olds to the bathroom. And the happiest kids of all of these schools, one in Japan, one in China, one in the United States, the happiest kids were in Japan. And the philosophy of the staff, it's a Zen Buddhist school, by the way, the philosophy is, we're going to take a natural approach to child rearing. You leave them alone. They figure out how to get along with each other. They would take these kids to lots near construction sites on a rainy day just to discover that they can have a good time any place. Mm-hmm. You know which preschool had the most amount of fighting?
Us.
Japan, China, or the United States?
America.
Yeah. Fancy preschool with beautiful toys, lots of money. One adult per six students. Not one per 30, one adult per six students. The kids are fighting all the time. And one of the main duties of the teachers is to intervene in the kids' fights. So you have these transcripts of what the teachers are saying to the kids and how they're trying to help them work it out. And it's so ridiculous. And the teachers are spending so much time trying to get the kids to stop fighting. And in Japan, you have 30 students for one teacher. They don't do anything to stop the fighting, and there's hardly any fighting. There's some play fighting, but that's fun. And these are the happiest kids in the Japan school, and the teachers don't intervene in the kids fighting.
Yeah. Like I said, if I don't know that even after all my years with little people, I don't know if you would have gotten an argument out of me a little bit about this until I was at the Wellington Mall here. Like 6 times this year I've gone with just AJ, and that meant he had to find a friend. I didn't take another cousin or anybody with him, and I just sit and watch him, and I was amazed at the, you know, at everything. And like I said, the only time there was any kind of a situation is when a mom or a grandma or a daddy or somebody jumped up and went running over. If everybody just laid back, they can't get hurt because it's one of those foam floors, and even the toys that they climb on are that soft plastic. So nobody really gets hurt either. And
it's a fantastic place.
It really is, and there's nothing that has moving parts, you know, nothing that they can really get hurt on. And I watch them all, and they jump on top of them and land on their knees. And the first time, I was like, "Oh my God, this kid's going to be covered with bruises." Not, you know, it's perfect. It's perfect for them. So I do agree, and I do see the worth of letting them figure out. Of course, I talked about that with Linda about being with really young kids, like 2-year-olds, brother and sister, even 2- and 3-year-old. If you pull my hair, I pull yours, but we share. I take your bottle, you take mine. You're chewing on a carrot, I take the other end of it and chew on it. I see that kind of behavior in babies like that all the time, and I've always you know, felt bad that we lose that, because that is a beautiful thing when they're really young like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's no difference whatsoever in what you look like. I mean, that isn't even a part of the scenario, whether you're black or green or blue or yellow.
That's right.
So, you know, that part is beautiful
children,
as well.
Yeah, little children are not racist.
Mm-mm. You know, when I was a baby, I think I was 3, they took me to Washington, D.C., and my uncle worked in the White House, and they took me to the back, and I met my first black man, and I can still remember, he seemed gigantic to me. He picked me up and held me, and I was real close to his face, and I can remember saying, "It's very strange that he has this color face." You know, I remember thinking that, but there was no fear. It just dawned on me, gosh, I never saw a face this color. And I was about 3, little enough for him to lift me up and carry me around. So I think that's why I love what Linda's doing. So you're in agreement, I guess, with Linda's technique too, because if we can start when they're very young, of course, that's the most opportune time.
Now, it's wonderful if there are kids who have obvious differences or imperfections. It's important that they have, the self-esteem to know that they're different, or maybe they have something wrong with them, but it's okay. They don't have to get upset by it. The problem is, kids, I don't know of any schools today that teach children that they should be mean to each other. They shouldn't accept each other. Every school teaches this stuff. Children's books teach this stuff. So kids are taught that it's okay to be different, that you should accept people who are different. But kids don't always know what to do when somebody does pick on them for being different. So let's say, okay, I think it's okay to be different, but now you're picking on me. What am I supposed to do? You're insulting me. How do I handle it?
Mm-hmm.
So the tendency is to get angry. And if they get angry, they're going to keep on getting picked on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just enough to teach children that it's okay to be different and you should accept people who are different. You also have to teach them what to do when somebody does pick on you for being different. That's the missing thing from all of this anti-bullying education.
Right.
Well,
we talked a little bit about that, because I even said to Linda, I mean, you know, when you're talking about them and you're talking to a child, and you know she shows you the animals, and she says, you know, this whale, you know, see, he's different from all the other whales. The other whales have these big, beautiful spouts on their tops, and and she talks about all that. But I even ask, I said, do you believe that when they start to notice the differences, that those differences should be addressed, or do you think the best school of thought is what you're talking about, which would be to just leave them to their own devices? So that goes along with when somebody finally notices and says, my God, you know, you have the biggest nose I've ever seen, you know. What should we be telling the kids when that does happen to them? Just to do like what you said, I thought, you know, we were okay. Why are you talking about my nose? What did we say to them?
We have to teach the kids not to get upset because somebody's mentioning their imperfection. One way of doing it, you know, is the preemptive way. And this is, you know, what I do in schools. I don't generally do with preschools or kindergartners because they don't have much of a problem. If you leave them alone, they get along. The problems begin like in second grade, then kids really start picking on each other. But
right.
If I work in school, I'll go to every class and give them lessons on what to do if somebody insults you, if they spread a rumor about you, if they hit you. I give them lessons what to do if they're bullied, so then they know how to handle it. But let's say something does happen and the kids come to you for help. Let's say, Renee, I'm the teacher, and you're
okay.
a little girl, and you come complaining to me that Johnny called you an idiot.
Now, the
thing that everybody's being taught to do is I, the teacher, have to go support you and reprimand the kid who called you an idiot. That's what I'm supposed to do today. So let's say, Renee,
right.
I go and I tell Johnny, you apologize to Renee, you're not allowed to call her, you know, to insult her.
Right.
If I do that, is that going to make Johnny like you better?
No. No. It's going to really make him dislike me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it going to make him like me better?
No.
No, because I took your side against him. So now
right.
Johnny is more mad at you, and he's mad at me also. When I reprimand him, did it teach you, Renee, that you should or should not be upset when kids insult you?
No, it means I had a right to be upset.
Yeah, you should be upset. He did a terrible thing. Otherwise, why am I reprimanding him? So I have just taught the kids that they should get upset when they're insulted.
Right.
So the next time somebody insults you, you're going to get upset again, and you're going to come and tell me, and I'm going to reprimand him, and you're going to be so happy because the teacher took your side. But now Johnny is mad at both of us, and he wants to get back. So he's going to look for another opportunity to upset you, to get back at you. And I, the teacher, am busy stopping these fights. I'm creating them.
Right.
Now, let's say, Renee, you come and tell me Johnny called me an idiot. Or let's say you have some kind of a difference that he's making fun of you. Let's say he calls you Dumbo because you have big ears. So come
right.
and tell me, Mr. Kalman, Johnny called me Dumbo.
Mr. Kalman, Johnny called me Dumbo.
Do
he hurt my
him?
Feelings.
Do you believe him?
No, I don't believe him.
Oh, good. Oh, I don't either. I don't believe him.
Okay, so you stopped me right in my tracks with what you said. I mean, I don't know if you're going to stop a 7-year-old in their tracks, but you did me.
Oh, absolutely. Teachers love this. I've worked
mm-hmm.
with so many teachers who were driven crazy by the constant fighting between the kids, and they're busy investigating, interrogating, judging, punishing. I taught mm-hmm. them, just ask the kid, do you believe it? And it works like magic. After a couple of days, the kids stop complaining because they realize it's nonsense. Plus, let's say if I do this, and both you and Johnny hear me, did I make Johnny more mad at you?
No. I don't
did
think
I make
so.
Him?
Well, I don't know. I would say no, yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't reprimand him.
Right,
I didn't reprimand
him. You didn't
say
anything to him,
yeah. You didn't get him in trouble. You know, the worst thing you can do to somebody is to try to get them in trouble. So you didn't get him in trouble, so he's not more mad at you. Is Johnny mad at me, the teacher?
No.
Does Johnny have to get back at either of us?
No.
No, because he doesn't need revenge. Did I teach you that you should or should not be upset by insults?
Well, I think you taught me that, but I also think you taught me that, you know, if I don't believe it, you know, that I have big ears, then it's probably not true. Now, let me ask you this. What if it is true? What if you, let's do the scenario this way. I come up to you and I say, Mr. Kaplan, Johnny's making fun of me. He's calling me Dumbo because I have big ears. And then you say what you said, and then let me another room.
Let's act it out. Let's say you do have very big ears. Well, Dumbo is the name of an elephant. So, you know, it's a cartoon elephant. So in any case, you're not Dumbo. But let's say he said, you tell me, Johnny said I have big ears.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
Johnny says I have big ears, and he called me Dumbo.
Do you believe him?
Well, my daddy says my ears are kind of big.
Yeah, they're a little bit big, right? Now, when Johnny calls you Dumbo, do you get upset?
Yes, it hurts my feelings.
Yeah. When you get upset, does Johnny feel sad or happy?
He looks like he feels happy.
Yeah, he loves to see you getting upset. Now, let's say he called you Dumbo, and it didn't bother you. Would it be fun for him?
Probably not.
No, it's only fun if you get upset. He's not calling you Dumbo because you have big ears. He's calling you Dumbo because you get upset when he calls you Dumbo.
Uh-huh.
So let him say all he wants.
Uh-huh. Okay, that makes sense. I like that. So, all right. So let's do this. Let's get into a teen scenario where we have a girl who's being picked on all the time, and she does believe the things people are saying, and she's actually done a few things to hurt herself, and everybody in the eighth grade class knows that she has. And they start picking on her. Now, maybe when you have a scenario like this, it's time to move on to a whole other level of attention. I don't know. But say she's in the lunchroom and everybody starts picking on her, not just Johnny, but, you know, like 10 kids, girls and boys, and pick on her. How would you teach her to deal with that?
I would role play with a whole group, and I'd have her be part of a group. Now, this works very well if I have a group of kids in the room. So I'll say, I want you to all make fun of me and laugh along and everybody join in. And what I do is the first time I get angry at them, leave me alone, don't talk to me like that, it's not true, you're lying. You know, I become defensive, I get angry. And when I do that, everybody laughs and they keep on insulting me, it escalates and goes on and on endlessly. Then I stop at one point and I say, we're going to do it over again. And this time I have everybody in the group insulting me, but I treat them like friends. You call me a fat, so I say, oh, yeah, I wish I could be skinny like you. You tell me my clothing is ugly, I'll say, yeah, I wish that my parents could afford better clothing for me. I'll just treat you all like friends. And before long, it just fizzles out and the kids stop insulting me. It works every time.
So in other words, you're going to show her to just not buy into it.
Or not to get upset by it. It's not a matter of buying into it. Let's say I'm overweight and everybody is picking on me for being overweight. And it's true that I'm overweight, but I don't have to get upset by it. I'll tell you, yeah, it's really tough to be overweight. I've been dieting and nothing works, and you know, I wish I could be like you. As long as I don't get upset by it, it's not going to be fun to pick on me.
Uh-huh. Well, but, Izzy, what do you do about a kid that can't help but get upset about it? I mean, does it take a long time for you to get a child that has gone through maybe the entire school career going through stuff like that, especially if the issues are blatant and are big ones? Can you just look at a child after a couple different times and get them to a point where they're not going to be affected by what they're saying? And really,
it usually takes one session. After the first session, things start getting better. Now, by the way, Weenie, I don't know who's listening, but I have a program. I personally treat kids who are picked on. I give a flat fee for as long as it takes. For $495, I guarantee that I'm going to solve your kid's problem. I'll work with him as long as it takes. And if I don't succeed, I give you your money back.
Okay.
And my success rate is at least
90%.
Wow. But things usually get better after the first session, unless the kid has some kind of neurological impairment or psychiatric condition. If they're anywhere close to normal, they get it in the first session.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Go ahead, Joe.
One quick question along the lines of what you guys are talking about right now. What if you had someone, and this might fall into the issue of a psychiatric that would be based on a trauma, but what if you had a young person, either a very young child or a teenager, that was scarred in an accident? I actually know someone that went through this. And they're very embarrassed now. They feel ugly. So now their whole self-esteem is shattered. And they have a terrible scar right across the right cheek. And I guess because their own self-image was so damaged, they went from being a very outgoing individual to being very timid and shy and reclusive. And they started getting picked on. And they were called Scarface and things like that. And it was just devastating. She didn't even want to go to school anymore. Does that fall into the realm of psychiatric, or could you even help someone who went through that sort of a trauma?
I can easily help them. They'll be so grateful to me. As long as they don't have, like, a serious ability or disability in thinking, I can help them.
Okay.
Now, what's happening is, the kid is very, very upset because of what happened to them. They can't stand looking at themselves in the mirror. So they feel terrible about themselves. So then in school they withdraw. And when they withdraw, they look like a loser. And then nobody respects them, and kids don't want to play with them. And if kids pick on them, they get upset, so they get picked on even more, and they spiral downhill and don't want to go to school anymore. So with such a kid, I would role play with them to teach them how to deal with other kids. And they'll be so grateful to me.
Okay. All right, very good. Now,
if you want to do some role playing with that,
do you deal with any part of their own attitude towards themselves, or do you only deal with their attitude towards what other people are saying to them?
Okay. My first concern is getting kids to stop picking on them, because that's what makes them miserable, and that they can make it stop quickly. It's very easy to make other kids stop picking on you. But now you're also faced with the fact that you're deformed, you're going to look different probably for the rest of your life, you're very upset about it. So I'll talk to you about it, about how you feel about it. I'll try to make you realize that it's not the end of the world. There are lots of people, nobody's perfect. There are people with terrible deformities, but they're still happy. But I'll try to get you to accept yourself. That can be a longer process. That's a longer process. But first, I want to get kids to stop picking on you.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest problems, of course. So I would go along with Izzy on that, is stopping the immediate trauma and then working on somebody's self-esteem after the fact, because you can't work on self-esteem when they're still being battered. So,
and the one actually aggravates the other, it just makes it worse.
Yeah. So now we've covered the kids that are being picked on for no reason, the kids that are being picked on because there is a reason, and The other thing I wanted to talk about is, well, and I've kind of already brought it up, what is if the person that's picking on them is somebody in their own family, like a parent?
I'll teach them how to deal with their parents. I recently did a role play with you like this, where the father is very abusive and insulting.
Right, right. But I mean, well, that was because, you know, he was trying to look out for my safety, and he really just wanted me to behave in a really good manner. What if I once knew a young girl whose father's pet name for her was Magilla Gorilla, and when I heard him call her that name. Magilla Gorilla, a cartoon character.
I remember.
Okay.
Yes.
And I was mortified that her own father called her Magilla Gorilla. And she didn't like it either and was very embarrassed that myself and other people heard him say that to her. And he would pick on her a lot and tell her that she needed to be on a diet, not let her eat a second helping of anything. I mean, I guess I was very young when I saw all this, and I made myself believe that he thought he was doing what was right. So that's how I got past it myself. But how do you teach a child to get past that? Because a lot of times the parent is just dumb. They think that they're doing something good, and they're just causing deeper scars. So would you treat the parent for that, or would you find that to be maybe not something that's going to work, and just try to get the child to understand something else?
I always like to work with parents. If the parents are willing to meet with me, I'd rather work with parents, because the parents are the authorities, and they deserve to learn how to be a good parent. So I always prefer to work with parents. But if you're a kid and I have no possibility of working with your parents, I'll try to teach you how to deal with your parent.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather teach your parent that by calling you Magilla Gorilla, it's not helping you. If anything, it's making it worse.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the parent, I'll try to teach you how to deal with your child so that they're more likely to go on a diet and try to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
But by insulting them, you're probably doing the opposite. And I'll show them how they're doing the opposite. Do you want me to role play with you? You're the kid and I'm treating you?
Yeah, let's
see.
You're Dr. Kaplan, and I've come to you.
Kalman. It's Kalman.
Kalman, I'm sorry. Kalman.
It's a very common mistake. Everybody thinks it's Kaplan. Kalman.
Mm-hmm. And I've written it 1,000 times, too, so that tells you something about my psyche. I'm coming to see Dr. Kalman, and I'm sharing this kind of dark secret with you about my dad, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
so let me talk to you. Okay.
How old are you?
I'm 13.
What is your father puts you down a lot?
Well, he thinks that I'm too fat, and I guess I am heavier than most of my girlfriends, and he doesn't let me like have sweets, and if everybody has a pizza party, I can have one piece of pizza and that's all. I have to drink all sugar-free drinks, and I mean, you know, he rides me if I don't. If I want more than that, then he really yells at me and tells me, you know, I'm too fat, that I have to do something about it. He's mean to me, and he hurts my feelings.
And when he yells at you and insults you, what do you do?
Most of the time, sometimes I fight back, but most of the time I cry.
Okay. Now, you want your father to stop putting you down, right?
Yep.
Now, isn't your father supposed to love you and care about you?
Well, that's what I don't know anymore. Maybe he doesn't love me because I am too fat.
But isn't he supposed to love you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, my mom loves me the way I am.
So has your father discovered that you get upset when he puts you down?
Yeah, he sees me cry.
So why does he keep on doing it? Why doesn't he stop? What's wrong with him?
I don't know. You know, maybe he doesn't care about me.
It seems that way, but he should. He's your father. He's supposed to care about you. How can he be such a bad father? He knows it hurts you. But you want him to stop doing this, right?
I do.
Okay. I'm going to teach you why he keeps on putting you down, and I'm going to teach you how to get him to stop doing it.
Okay.
And now I want, by the way, can I call you Rini?
Yes, please.
Okay. Okay. I want you to make believe you're your father, and I'm going to play you. And I want you to put me down for being overweight.
Okay. I don't want to see you take another helping of the mashed potatoes. Eat your vegetables and your meat, and that's all I want to eat on that plate. You'd look like you're putting on more weight again.
I'm not putting on weight. I stayed the same. You know, I didn't. I only had a small portion of mashed potatoes. I need some more potatoes.
No, I don't want you to have any more potatoes. And I don't want you to have a piece of bread. And I want you to just eat your vegetables and your meat.
Stop trying to control me. You always tell me what to eat. Leave me alone already.
Well, do you want to be fat all your life? Because once you get older, it'll harder.
Don't worry, I'll get skinnier.
How are you going to do that? If you keep on eating the way you're eating, how are you going to get skinny?
You'll see I'll get skinny. If you leave me alone, you know, I'll become responsible. I can't stand when you tell me what to do.
All this week I haven't said anything to you. All this week I haven't said anything to you. Every night at the dinner table you've taken extra of the starch on the table, and I didn't say anything and waited for you to realize what you were doing, and you didn't do it. So I have to tell you, otherwise you're going to be fatter and fatter and fatter.
It's not true. I'm not going to. I weighed myself. I didn't gain anything this week.
I don't believe you. You're going to have to weigh yourself in front of me.
Stop acting like you're my boss. It's my life. Stop telling me what to do. Leave me alone. Okay, let me stop here.
Okay.
As dad, you know, you're being dad. Am I making you want to stop telling me what to do?
No. You're making me feel like whenever they talk back like that they're just being disrespectful, and that I know what's right for her, and she doesn't.
Yes, so you keep on insisting. It escalates.
Yeah.
You're telling me more and more. I didn't say anything the whole week long, and now I have to tell you, and you're going to get heavy. You know, it got into a. You were telling me more and more what to do and putting me down for being overweight. Could you respect me for the way I'm acting?
It's given me more and more proof that I'm right, that I have to, you know, that if I really want to do my job as her father, I have to stay on her or she's going to, you know, and then she'll be miserable. So someplace in my heart, I'm doing it for her own welfare. But, I realize that she's not going to do it on her own because she doesn't care enough at this point in time. So it's my job to make sure she understands what a toll it's going to take on her life if she doesn't slim down.
That's right. So when I act like this, you want to keep on telling me what to do and putting me down, but you can't respect me because I'm getting angry. I sound immature. Was I making you happy that I'm your daughter?
No.
Now we're going to do it again, and this time I'm going to treat you like a friend. Put me down again for eating too much.
Okay. I don't want you to put extra mashed potatoes on your plate tonight because I see that you're putting on weight again, and you've got to stop. Eat your vegetables and eat your meat, and that's all tonight.
Dad, does it really look like I'm gaining more weight?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, you know, it's so hard for me to stop because, you know, I love mashed potatoes, and I feel if I just have like a normal portion, I'm not satisfied. I feel like I need more. I still feel hungry.
Well, you should eat more vegetables to fill yourself up because having more mashed potatoes, it doesn't serve you. There's no nutrients in it, and it's just fattening for you. I don't want you to have any more of them.
Yeah, you're really concerned about my weight, right?
I am, and it's for your own welfare.
Yeah, I know you care about my welfare. This is not for you. I know that you care about me, and you want to see me being thinner and healthier.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Now, the truth is, Dad, I don't like my weight either. I'm not happy with it. But it's so hard for me to lose. You know, I try dieting, and I go on a diet for a while. Then when I'm off the diet, I gain even more weight. I heard about it. It's called the yo-yo effect. It's so hard for me to lose weight, Dad.
Well, yo-yo effect means that one day you diet and the next day you overdo. So that's what you have to get a handle on. You have to start doing the same thing and cut back on the calories every day. That's why I have to yell at you and tell you what you should be doing.
Yeah, I know that you really mean for my best. I'm glad you're concerned about me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to run, don't mind.
Yeah, those kind of words, are, for me, that's what turns me around, is when you start giving me, first of all, the respect, and you realize that I am just thinking about you, then I feel myself turning around and feeling more compassion for your plight instead of being angry because you're not doing what I tell you to do.
Right. And this way you might be a little bit more lenient, maybe you'll help me. Figure out how much is okay to eat, but you like me better this way because I'm not angry at you. You can trust me more because I'm acting mature, and it's so much easier.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
The
Absolutely.
First, my blood test was going up.
Let me ask
you
a question.
Go ahead, Chuck.
What happens when a lot of the scenarios that you guys go over when you're dealing with the parents? You're dealing with parents that are well-meaning. Okay, that they don't mean to be. You know, hurting the child, but when you just did, he really just wanted her not to be getting too heavy, okay? But what about when you have a parent that is abusive because they're abusive, because they're just mean-spirited, they're manipulative, they're just mean, they say mean things not to benefit, but just because they're an ass and they're abusive. How would you teach a child to deal with that situation?
The same way. First of all, I would do the same thing. I would teach the child to talk to the father like a friend. I have rules for treating people like friends. And if you understand the rules, you always know the right way to answer. But let's say you can't stop your father from being insulting and screaming. It's just the way he is. It's his personality. He's always been this way. He's like this with everybody. I mean, he's not allowed to injure you. If your father is battering you, that's a crime. He should be reported to the Child Protective Services. But if he's not, you know, battering you and injuring you, it's just verbal. So I'll teach you, okay, this is the way he is. Do you want to be upset by him, or do you just want to be happy and let him be that way? And it's still you.
It's an actual scenario that happened, and maybe you could address it because it's, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of other people have dealt with similar situations, although the specifics would be different. But there was an individual, he was very angry, and his daughter was working for him. And he would go in the office, he'd give her a bunch of instructions, and she worked in an office where she was in front of customers. He would give her a bunch of instructions, leave the office, and then he'd come back in the office like an hour later and just start screaming at her using curse words, calling her an idiot, saying she's incompetent right in front of the customers. Meanwhile, she had done everything he asked her to do, and this went on for months. And this was actually, I'm saying that these two people, was actually my father did this to my sister. And I was working at the same business. And once I saw my sister started losing weight, and she was actually getting physically ill from it, this went on for a couple of months. I didn't even know it. And one day I followed him in the office, pretended I was getting coffee, and I heard him give her instructions. Sure enough, later, about an hour later, he goes back in the office. So I followed him back in, pretended to get another cup of coffee, and he did exactly what she told me he was doing. He went nuts. He started screaming. And there was customers sitting right there. So obviously they think my sister's an idiot. And she would just crumble. She would just start crying. And I actually stopped it because I walked up to him and I said, Dad, what are you doing? I said, she did everything you asked. So I kind of stopped it that day because I confronted him about it. But she couldn't. For 2 months, she couldn't get him to stop. And it got to the point where she was she was actually not eating. She was throwing up every night. She just got physically stressed out by the whole thing because she knew that every day he was going to do this to her.
Yeah. Now, when you have a family business, there are problems that happen that don't happen in other businesses because family members tend to take each other for granted. So, you know, we talk to our family members much more rudely than we would dare to talk to somebody who works with us or a stranger or a customer. So the father, you know, took it for granted that he can scream at his daughter because he thinks of her as the daughter, not as my employee. If he did this to an employee, she'd probably leave or report him or something, unless she was really had no self-esteem. But you probably wouldn't dare to talk like this to a worker from outside of the family. But anyway, what you did was very nice. You know, you stopped it. You knocked some sense into him. But nobody told your sister what to do. You know, if your sister would have come to me complaining, I would have taught her how to talk to her father. And if you want, I can demonstrate what I would have taught her.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Okay. Who should I do this with? Was that Shelly talking to me?
Yes, it's Shelly.
Okay. Can I do it with you, Shelly?
Sure.
Okay. Let's say you're my father. I work for you, and you've been screaming at me. So what I'll do is I'll go and talk to you alone. You know, I'll come to your office. Dad, can I talk to you?
Dad, can
I talk to you? You know,
sure.
Dad, I really love you, and I'm glad that I'm able to work for you. But I don't know if you realize it, but you often come into my office when there are customers, and you start screaming at me and making me look like I'm incompetent. You know, it really hurts you when you do that.
Well, you don't do what I ask you to do.
You know, if you have a problem with me, talk to me alone. But when you come into the office and other people are there, you humiliate me. Plus, I wonder what the people think about you also, that you're berating me in front of everybody. I don't know if this is good for business, Dad.
Oh, that's a very interesting point. You kind of got my attention right there. If my sister had ever said that to my father, making him not want to do it to her wouldn't have been enough, but telling him that he's making himself look bad in front of the customers, that probably would have gotten his attention. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that right there stopped it for me.
You know, I teach people, first of all, you have to realize life is not perfect. We're going to encounter situations that are difficult, and people aren't always going to be nice to us. So you have to realize nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. They're not perfect. So sometimes people treat us in an imperfect way. So talk to them. Talk to them like a friend. Let them know what bothers you nicely without anger, like you're really trying to help them and help both of you. And then they'll listen to you because you're not mad at them. And they'll respect you because you're not afraid of them. You know, if I'm afraid of you and I avoid you, you can't respect me because I put myself on the bottom. But if I talk to you directly without fear, you respect me more because I'm not afraid of you. And I'm not attacking you. I'm just talking to you nicely, and then you'll be able to accept it. But if I talk to you angrily and blame you, then you want to get defensive and blame me. But there has to be no hostility. I teach people how to talk without hostility.
Yeah. Oh, no, I like that a lot, because and that was the problem. See, I wasn't afraid of my father, so he never did any of the things to me that he did to my sister, but my sister was petrified of him. And I was always in a position of trying to step in to help her deal with him, but I never thought of telling her some of the techniques you're doing. I just knew that I reacted differently to him, or I responded differently, so he wouldn't pick on me. But I like that. That's very good. Very good.
By the way, you know, the things I'm teaching now, I didn't learn these things in school. I didn't learn this in psychology. How do you deal with difficult people? We learned psychoanalysis and all kinds of theories and play therapy or all kinds of fancy therapies, but we were never taught to teach people to treat others like friends. How do you talk to people when you're having a hard time with them? I never learned this.
Right.
But over the years, I've come to see, boy, this is knowledge that's been around forever, but you have to teach it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Well, you know, Renee and I have both talked about it many times, is that almost on an instinctual level, Renee and I have actually acted in a way that's very representative of what you teach, of what you recommend.
Yeah.
But we did it almost instinctually. Since it's not a conscious thought on my part, it's just kind of like how I respond to the situation and it's how Renee responds, I always had a hard time, like, trying to figure out how to tell somebody else to deal with the situation the same way I was, because I really didn't know what the mechanics were behind what I was doing. I just knew that I responded differently and I got different results.
Yeah.
So you actually identified the conduct.
Yeah. I have developed rules for treating people like friends. There are rules.
Right.
What do you, an enemy you treat this way, a friend you treat that way. And most people aren't aware of this, like defensiveness. You know, when we're defensive, we think the other person is being hostile. But if we defend ourselves from friends or enemies?
Enemies.
If I'm defensive,
I'm treating you like you're my enemy. Mm. Otherwise, why am I defending myself? So even, you know, I think I'm the good one because you're attacking me, I'm defending myself. But I'm also treating you like an enemy. Plus, I lose if I defend myself because it's the weaker position. So if I defend myself, I'm reinforcing you're attacking me. And it's not conscious in your mind. You're not thinking consciously, oh, Izzy is being defensive, which means I have the upper hand, so I'm going to keep on doing this to him. There's no conscious thought behind it. But by my being defensive, I'm reinforcing your offensiveness. So I'm unwittingly making you become more offensive towards me by defending myself.
Oh, wow. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about this last night, Izzy. We talked about how you have taught us that bullies almost always feel as though they're the victim. And it's true. I just had this conversation with some teenagers tonight, talking about who feels right and who feels wrong. And I said it's very rare that somebody feels like they're wrong when they're fighting with somebody else, because they feel as though the other person wronged them. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a problem to begin with. And some of my younger kids said, well, sometimes people say mean things to me, you know, and I didn't say anything to them. And I said, well, good. Maybe there's no words. Maybe it's your actions, or maybe you've done something that you're unaware of. But chances are, if somebody starts something with you, it's because you either did something, said something, or gave the impression of feeling something. And often the way Izzy has explained it to us is, you know, you just say, are you mad at me about something? And let them figure out what to say next. Just stand there and wait. And my one grandson says, that sounds awful hard, Graham. And I said, well, it's not as hard as getting punched in the nose, is it? He said, no, I guess not. So I said, well, give it a shot then. You know, what have you got to lose? So I do think that they understood what I was saying. It took them a while because they kept looking at me. And then you know how kids are. All of a sudden I kind of saw a little light go on, and Austin says, I think I understand. And I said, good, because it makes a lot of sense to me. There's no reason for somebody to get angry with you over nothing. Not really. So usually there's something, and sometimes it had something to do with something you did not aware of, you know.
Yeah, Renee,
I think they like that.
There's a very simple way to know whether somebody feels victimized by you, whether they're picking on you just for the fun of it, or whether they feel victimized by you. And that is the person angry at you. If the person is angry at you, it means they feel that you did something wrong to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're pushing me around angrily, it means you feel you're my victim, so you're getting back at me. If you're pushing me around and laughing, it means you just want to make a fool out of me or have some fun at my expense. If you're laughing,
right.
But if you're angry when you're pushing me, you feel that I'm the bad guy.
I'm going to write that down so I remember to tell the kids that, because that's true. All right. Well, we've used up our time, and it's been great as always. And it's looking more and more, Izzy, like we might do the event in the fall at a place called Good Earth Farms. But I will keep you posted. And I did get the video and everything, and we're all going to look at it this weekend and check things out and some of the brochures. So I want to thank you again, and hopefully we'll be with you again next Wednesday night. And thank you, Miss Shelley. As always, it was a pleasure. And to everyone else, good night and God bless.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you guys, good night. Thank you.